Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at. Illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that'll determine what the future will bring. And I have to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views. And then, well, this evening, for the first hour, they're going to be the views of Mr. Jim Guest, who is going to be talking about the real ID card, and he's a member of the legislature. Well, I'm going to let him tell you just a little bit about himself. We've had him on as a guest before, and always a very, very welcome guest here at Radio Liberty. Mr. Guest, thank you so very much for being with us.
Thank you. I'm glad to be on again and glad to share my message with the listeners around this country and around the world, wherever they're listening in tonight.
All right, fine. Well, tell us a little bit about yourself. You are a legislator. Whereabouts?
I'm a legislator in Missouri here. I live in northwest Missouri. I've got an engineering background, and I came back to the farm several years ago, and I'm a small businessman, starting some small businesses and other things. And about 6 years ago, I decided the opportunity was there for me to get into public service, so I ran as a state representative here in Missouri, and I've been elected to, three times now, and be running again for my fourth term next year. I've served on the Workforce Development Corrections Committees, and I've been chair of the Fiscal Review Committee here in Missouri for the last 2 years. As chairman of the Fiscal Review, any bill that comes through the state legislature that impacts the cost of it over $100,000 either way has to come from my committee for approval after it's had action on the floor. So I'm somewhat of a checks and balance there, and just have some influence on if I think our state is getting too extravagant in its spending. So,
well, let's talk a little bit about the RFID cards, because I think that this is something that people have to understand. There really are people who have a different worldview, and they want every person in this country numbered. Now, we were promised that our Social Security card number would never be used for anything but Social Security, and we only had to have that number because government loved us so much and wanted to give us money when we got old and couldn't work. But, of course, that was, like so many government promises, not true. They want every person numbered, and now they want everybody to eventually be forced to carry a card. They want to have RFID chips on every cow, and you see the cows now, they have these little green tags on their ears, but so many of them carry RFID, identification. What's this really all about, in your estimation?
I think you came very close to covering all of it. I believe the goal of those in our government to track us. I probably started working on this 2 or 3 years ago when the Real ID Act was passed, part of H.R. 418 in our U.S. Congress. H.R. 418 was a bill to provide about $82 billion in supplemental war effort for our soldiers, and also some charitable tsunami relief there. You know, two probably well-meaning things. So it was something that most members of Congress could not vote against.
But, of course, it had another little something on there.
Yes.
And, of course, that's
late one night in the House, they decided, I think, Senator James Sensenbrenner, a representative, added what was called the Real ID Act onto it.
All right, fine. So this is what they do, of course, so often to get to what they really want.
Mm-hmm. It was added there, and, you know, without very little debate, it went over to the Senate side, and never even had a debate on the Senate. It was voted out without any opposition. And lo and behold, what seemed like a very harmless bill contained the Real ID Act, and that is where we really have some serious problems facing us in the future. The Department of Homeland Security said that starting in May of 2008, you got to have a real ID card if you want to get on a federally regulated airplane or enter any federal building or any nuclear power plant.
Well, now, I thought this was all about terrorism. This is about stopping terrorism.
Oh, yeah.
But suddenly, are the terrorists going to have their RFID cards? Are all the terrorists going to abide by our laws? Or is this simply for the law-abiding citizens?
That's what it is. Why, if we're concerned about terrorists, are we putting this on the backs of the freedom-loving Americans? That is the fault in this. And actually, the national ID card, which is what it is, even though they say it's not, you know, they've been trying to get this passed for probably 30 years. In the Carter administration, they tried to get it implemented. In the Reagan administration, he outright told them it wasn't going to have it. And in the Clinton administration, they did kind of have an ID card attached to a bill, which was passed, but there was such a public outcry on it, it was taken out. So all they needed was a reason for it or an excuse. And when 9/11 happened, you know, the threat of terror or threat of another outbreak, they were able to slip it through at that point. And they say, well, we need to have a more secure driver's license. And to do that, you know, to stop terrorism, because the terrorist had some more than one driver's license. However, there's some fault in what they're saying there. The terrorists got their driver's license basically using a passport from some of the countries they came from. Those passports, which we accept, were stolen. So we have no way of controlling the authenticity or the accuracy of the passports when somebody from another country comes in. So that's where the policy comes in. They say they want to control terrorists. Well, let's target the terrorists, as you say. Let's not target those who are in this country, not causing any problems. I don't think the 80-year-old grandmother gets on an airplane is much of a threat, at least not in Missouri.
Well, I don't think so in much of the country at all. But, of course, this is really a long-range plan, and it's so difficult, I think, for many Americans to believe that there really would be those out there who are not interested at all in fighting terrorism, but are more interested in controlling and numbering and watching and observing and tracking law-abiding citizens, especially those like yourself and myself, who understand that there is a plan to do away with our sovereignty and bring us under the control of this ruling elite. We're going to be back here in just a moment here at Radio Liberty. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and our guest this evening is Jim Guest, who's a legislator in the state of Missouri, and he's been very concerned about this RFID card, this tracking card. They say it's just to be actually a driver's license, a secured, and of course we know it's a right driver's license because it has an RFID chip in it, but and somehow by getting every American to have to carry one of these cards, we're going to defeat Osama bin Laden, who wants to take away our freedom. And so by giving up our freedom and allowing us to be ourselves to be tracked, we're going to thwart the desires of the evil Osama bin Laden. So how do we counteract something like this? Because there's so many people who just blindly follow along whatever the government tells them without ever stopping and questioning what's really going on.
I think part of it, as you say, you know, a lot of people, it's slowly being implemented in various ways without the people's knowledge of what's on there. You know, they say they want, they say, yeah, this card has to have what they call a common machine-readable technology. So that's a barcode on it, on the back. However, they've backed off strongly saying it's going to have an RFID chip initially. What people need to know is the Department of Homeland Security has there is no judicial, there is no legislative oversight on this. If this is not stopped, we're giving them a blank check to increase any requirements in the future on it. And you can be assured that there will be a requirement that it have an RFID chip in it. And when that chip is placed in it, then we found out a few states have some RFID chips already in their driver's license, that this enables the government to keep track of you. All these databases, the states have to keep a database on you when you go get your new card with all your information on it. And with this big link, all you have to do is link into your Social Security number, and you can download and get whatever information that's on you, or anybody can. So that is where the problem comes in there, that we are becoming less secure instead of more secure. And the people think that with this real ID card that they will feel a little bit more secure. In essence, it's a false sense of security when this goes through.
And I think it's like with so many things. Initially, the American citizens invested literally hundreds of billions of dollars in defensive actions to protect us from the wicked communists. And we had to have these satellites that were to be up in space spying on the wicked communists. But now, of course, those same military satellites that have been used in the past to spy on the wicked communists are now being converted to civilian use so they can spy on the American people, not on the terrorists, because we don't care about terrorists. We haven't tried to seal our borders at all. Any effort to seal our borders has been effectively blocked, so we know that they're not really tracking the terrorists, but they are monitoring every American. In fact, they can even tell the quality of your roof. They can look at the shingles on your roof. The technology is that good. Designed to spy on the Soviets, but now, of course, spying on the American people. Well, how are we going to convince the American people that they really have to be concerned about freedom, Jim? So many people take freedom for granted here without recognizing that our founding fathers feared government more than anything. They feared that the power of government would eventually one day be used against the people. How are we going to get people to understand the American dream is based upon limiting the power of the government so men could be free?
You're right on the target there. We're supposed to be a government of the people, by the people, and for the people, not a government to be feared. It's the role of government to protect our freedoms, not to take them away, and certainly not by those who we elect and put in power to protect us. And do you know who is running our Department of Homeland Security on this real ID thing?
Oh, I don't know. Who is it?
We have five or six ex-KGB agents. Now, the KGB in Russia, were they working for the government or were they working for people? You know they were working for the government. They had people spying on each other. They had people carrying cards around so they could keep track of those. And that's exactly who we have over here instituting this program. So they are very knowledgeable on how to set up a program for the government to track you, to watch you, and know where you're going. You talk about losing our freedom. We will be losing it in huge jumps. And I say right now, this country is at the crossroads. Our future is at stake now. If we go down this road and this real ID is implemented, we're going to lose some freedoms that we will never get out. You know, the Constitution was in 1876, you know, it was founded in the Bill of Rights to establish and to protect our rights. That's rights of freedom of religion, speech, the right to bear arms, the right of assembly, the protection of our privacy and our personal papers, and that is what we're losing here. What protection do we have when the government can look into our bank accounts, monitor where we're going? That is what the Constitution was supposed to protect. I just kind of wonder what our forefathers would think if they were to come back and look at their country now. This is the country that, you know, they fought for. They put their lives and their whatever business they had on the line when they signed that Constitution. You know, they felt like freedom meant that much to them. Do the people in this country still value freedom that much? At least the people like you and I and others value the freedom enough that we're willing to fight for, but we've got to get the rest of the people to realize the danger that's confronting us now.
Well, of course, the thing is, you're in the state legislature. Do you think that the average member of your legislature understands the American Constitution? Do you think that they can understand that the whole purpose of our federal government was to limit the power of government, and that was the function of the Bill of Rights? Are they aware that our founding fathers feared the power of government, or are they simply doing what's sort of expedient? You know, this sounds like a good idea. Let's do it. After all, we've got to counter Osama bin Laden, because if we don't have everybody carrying one of these cards, Osama bin Laden's going to be able to take away our freedom.
Yep, the 10th Amendment says, and our forefathers was so intelligent, maybe they had some divine intervention there when they set that up. You know, it's It says that the federal government, it says the powers not delegated to the United States by the Constitution, nor prohibited by it to the states, are reserved to the states or to the people. The only power that the federal government has is what we give them or what's not prohibited by them. And they have certainly overstepped that bounds by, I don't know how much they've overstepped it in the last few years. They have forgotten what the Constitution is. I think we need to make sure at the beginning of each session in every state and at the U.S., at the Washington, D.C., that they read through that Constitution at the beginning of the session so that they understand what they're supposed to be governing by.
Well, I certainly think so. The thing is that certainly every state legislator, when he is sworn in, has to swear to uphold the Constitution and not only of the state but of the federal government and defend that Constitution of the United States against enemies both foreign and domestic. And nobody ever asks who those domestic enemies are, but I would like to suggest they're the people who want to change our form of government and have a different world view. And unfortunately, the average individual finds it so difficult to believe that there would be people here in the United States who don't believe in freedom, whose loyalty is to this globalist idea, this globalist concept of a ruling elite, because us common people are just too stupid to know what's best for us.
Yep, I say our country and its citizens are under attack. But this time it's not from outside, but it's from within our borders, you know. I think as Americans we're having our rights and freedoms stripped away from us at an alarming rate. And that's under this administration, and as I said earlier, this almost KGB-style Homeland Security. We must protect our country on our shores from those who would want to destroy our way of life. And we are... the people of a great nation if we protect the liberty by which it was founded. But then I think, as you mentioned earlier, the dangers our founding fathers worried about was our complacent nature when we become prosperous, when we take for granted that these freedoms are always going to be here. So,
amen to that. For our listeners out there, there's a wonderful book called Spy Chip, which we do carry, and we have a number of interviews with Catherine Albrecht and with her friend, Liz McIntyre, who has written extensively about this. Are you acquainted with Catherine Albrecht's work on the RFID chip?
I haven't read any of her books. I read some articles that she's put out, and, you know, she's right on target with that about the threat of what's coming with that, yes.
And not only that, but that shipping the animals on all of our farms, they want to be able to identify every animal that's out there. Even the little chickens. Well, of course, if you're a big chicken farmer, all the eggs are born on, you know, hatched on one day, and they can all be put under the same number. But if you're a small chicken farmer with a few hundred chickens and they hatch on different days, you have to have a separate RFID number and a chip on those. And I don't even know how you're going to be able to band all your chickens with different RFID tags. And certainly we know that they're already forcing the farmers to have their RFID on their cattle. And they even want the farmer to have to report if that cow is moved from one field to another. They want to know where all the cows in America are. How in heaven's name are they ever going to track all the cows? I mean, they can't even track the money that billions of dollars they send to Iraq.
There are some farmers throughout this country that are just outraged at the thought of this. You know, my position on this is if you want to put chips in your animals, if it's market-driven, you should be free to do that. You know, it should be market-driven for you to do that, to identify your animal. But you should not be forced to do this by your federal government. And that's certainly where we differ on this.
And, of course, this is going to be prohibitively expensive for the small farmer. But then there's some very large farmers who don't like the competition. What a wonderful thing to do, to use the federal government to get rid of your competition by making impossible demands on them that you don't have to abide by yourself. Well, Jim, so how are we going to reach the legislators? Because one of the most important things is to get the state legislators to understand. And what are they doing in your state? Are the people in your state going to go along with the RFID, or have they taken a stand against it?
Oh, yeah, let's go on to that. You know, there's people who told me that I could not oppose the federal government on this issue. But, you know, they're wrong. I'm getting other states to tell the federal government that no one is issue. I formed a coalition of states. It's called LORI, Legislators Against Real ID. And here in Missouri, I've got legislation filed for Missouri to oppose this, and I've sent this model legislation to other states. And to date, we have 8 states who have rejected the Real ID, where they've actually changed their state laws to say they will not go along with it. And we've probably got another 20 other states who have passed resolutions. Resolutions are not binding, but they sent it to their federal elected officials saying that they want to go on record as opposing it.
But, of course, the federal government is saying, you can't oppose this. We're in charge here. And so you're just not going to be able to get on a plane. You're not going to be able to travel, you know. You're going to have a passport. You want to get into a federal building. If you don't, we're going to punish you if you don't go along with our program, because we're here to protect you from the wicked Osama bin Laden, who's hiding over there in the cave in Pakistan.
Yep, that's, is that the way it's supposed to be? Is that we, the people, have to take back our country? Anyway, we are making progress in this. We're, telling the federal government that they've overstepped their bounds, that, you know, this is not a national security issue. It's a control issue that they're putting upon us. So I'm continuing to work. I think next year we'll get more states to change their laws to say that they will not go along with this. And hopefully, in their wisdom, that the federal government will vote and will repeal this Real ID Act and put in some sensible legislation to close our borders and start tracking those who come into our country who we think are terrorists, or at least put up some kind of a mechanism to screen those who we think are potential threats when they come into this country. You know, as long as until we close our borders, it makes no sense to start continuing to track and identify those who's in this country. There is no wisdom in it. It's just the idea that someone wants to control this. They want to know where we are. They want to know our business now and in the future.
Well, you know, of course, the thing is that it should be very obvious that the current administration has no interest in stopping a terrorist from coming across our southern border. In fact, you know, Congress had voted for a fence that was 700 or 800 miles long, and they appropriated the money for it, and of course the instructions were given that it was to be completed by about a year from now. And you know, the Bush administration has done everything they could to block the construction of that fence that was authorized by the state legislature. Are they free to? I thought the executive's purpose was to carry out the desire of the legislature, the federal legislature, not to simply have their own independent policy, independent of the wishes of the people.
That's what is happening. You know, we're getting so many executive orders issued to bypass the Congress, bypass the will of the people, and set policy out there. And that is wrong. You know, we've got this North American Union coming along, and for those who don't know what it is, the North American Union is a plan to form Mexico and Canada in with the United States into one union.
Hold that, though. We're going to be back here in just a moment here. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and Jim Guest is our guest for this hour. And he was just simply saying that there in Missouri, where he's in the legislature, he actually had gotten the state of Missouri to go ahead and vote to say, we're not going to go along with the RFID Act as far as individuals, the identification card for people. And then, of course, he's got a number of other state legislatures do exactly the same thing, and even a much larger number of state legislatures to pass non-binding resolutions opposing this whole idea. So how many other states have joined Missouri in saying, we're not going to go along with this federal program? How many other states have passed non-binding resolutions supporting your position?
I think we have 8 states right now that have passed, you might say, binding laws in their state that say they refuse to go along with it. You know, in essence, that says, you know, if the federal government says you can't get on an airplane if you don't have the real ID, then are these airlines going to avoid those 8 states? I don't think so. We may have a showdown come that point to see whether the federal government can control the airline industry or not. And then, like I said, this other 20 states who have probably passed resolutions, I think some more of those will come back next year and pass laws to change theirs to actually make it binding. Next year is an election year. I think it's very important for those people out there who want to protect their freedom. They ask those congressmen and senators where they stand on the freedom issue. Are they going to protect the freedom of the people in that state? Or are they going to side with the government and require you to have a real ID so you can be tracked? And that can be a very important or very persuasive issue in an election year.
And I really think this is really so true. I think that anybody with half an ounce of intelligence has to realize that the federal government really doesn't believe in a war on terrorism. If they believed in a war on terrorism, they certainly would have sealed our southern border. If they really believed in a war on terrorism, why they would have, gone ahead and built the fence that was authorized last year and was supposed to be completed a year from now. 700 or 800 miles of the fence is to be built along the 2,000-mile border. But, of course, they've even refused to only, they've built about 3 miles, and there's no way they're going to get the rest of this done. So, obviously, they have no intention of trying to block the terrorists. They are using the threat of terrorism to justify a police state controls on the American people. That's what it's really all about. I mean, if they were really concerned about Osama bin Laden, they would have pursued him on into Pakistan and captured him. If they really were concerned about Osama bin Laden, they would have captured him when they had him holed up in the Torbau Mountains instead of letting him escape and refusing to allow the American troops who were there to actually try to catch him. So nothing as it appears to be, and certainly if they were concerned about Osama bin Laden, then why did they forget stop trying to catch him and actually then go to war with Iraq? Was that what it was really all about to begin with? And certainly was Osama bin Laden just a good excuse to justify that? Let me just read you very briefly from page 180 of the book called, written by Tom Keene and Lee Hamilton, and it dealt with what was the 9/11 Commission report. And this is a fascinating book. It's called Without Precedent, and here's why, simply what it says. Condoleezza Rice was asked by one of the members of the 9/11 Commission, and I quote, "Why the Bush administration had not held senior-level meetings on counterterrorism before September 2001, and why more had not been done to take defensive measures in response to the threat of reporting over the spring and summer of that year." And Condoleezza Rice responded and pointed out that the nation simply wasn't prepared to take drastic action against Al-Qaeda before 9/11. Either abroad or in reforming government at home, and said, and I quote Condoleezza Rice, "Until there is a catastrophic event that forces people to think differently, that forces people to overcome all customs and old culture and old fears about domestic intelligence, then you don't get that kind of change." Let me repeat that. Until there is a catastrophic event that forces people to think differently, that forces people to overcome all customs and old culture and old fears about domestic intelligence, that you don't get that kind of change. In other words, we weren't going to change the American people's attitude about freedom until there was a major event. And boy, there sure was a major event. They didn't try to stop it. That comes from page 180 of Without Precedent, and you'll actually find the testimony in the 9/11 Commission report. Read it, understand, ladies and gentlemen, that they specifically did not try to stop the attack because they wanted to change our attitude. Well, Jim, you can't be very popular there in Washington, D.C., or with the Office of Homeland Security when you were standing in defiance of the elite who really want to control the population.
You know, that's right. I've heard that I'm not very popular going against what the bureaucracy wants to do. But, you know, once I think about this, and I thought, you know, I don't want to sit on my steps with my grandchildren and say, you know, I can remember back when America used to be free. I don't want to do that. I want to keep this country free, and I hope that our forefathers would look down and say, you know, I'm proud of what you're doing. That's what we did when we established the freedom and the Constitution, the Bill of Rights in this country. That's what it's about. And I think we've got many people out there who will join us in this. And if they want to learn more about this, we have a website. It's Legislators Against Real ID. It's www.legislatorsagainstrealid.com, or they can Google L.A.R.I. space real ID, and it will come up, and that will give them some more information on it.
Oh, could they just actually Google in your name, Jim?
Yes. I've got so many articles out there on me that will probably bring it up. And also, you know, my travel around the country, I'm doing this on my own dime, and I've had a lot of people who want to, you know, contribute a few dollars to help me. And I've got a committee set up to do that. It's a committee for America's Freedom, Box 601, King City, Missouri, 64463. And I get donations all over the country. I got some small check today from Texas. I get several from California. You just name it. People that hear me on this program and others, you know, want to help. You know, it doesn't make any difference to the size of the donation. It can be a small amount or it can be a large amount, and just all it does is goes to pay for my travel. I went back to Williamsburg, Virginia, and spoke to the 16 southern states at their legislative conference, and there were several legislators that wanted a copy of the model legislation there. I went to Michigan to speak to the Midwest Legislative Conference a couple of weeks ago, and there were several states that you know, some of them had kind of heard about it, but they didn't realize the full implications of it, so they want copies of it to hopefully they can implement in their legislation next year. So it takes some work. We've got a lot of legislators around the country who have joined forces with me to work on this. But then, as you said earlier, yes, it's not very popular when you go against a program that somebody has set up in D.C. to take away.
Hold that thought. We'll be right back. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and Jim Guest is our guest. And Cynthia, if you're out there in the listening audience, you have a question, a comment, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. Would love to hear from you. I'm sure Mr. Guest would be glad to answer your questions. Now, Mr. Guest, of course, is actually his website's out there. He does all this on his own. If you'd like to help him and like to contribute towards his travel, because, of course, he's spending a great deal of his time traveling and talking to legislators from other states and developing this, certainly this groundswell of opposition in state legislatures to this idea that we will each have to have our own little card so that we can be tracked, so that we can thwart the efforts of Osama bin Laden, who wants to take away our freedom. And Jim, I'd like you to go ahead and get your web page out again, would you?
Okay. It's Legislators Against Real ID.
Legislators Against Real ID.
LARI, L-A-R-I, you know. And, or like I said, you can Google in my name, and I'm pretty sure it'll bring it up and several other things that I've been working on there. And that website does have, you can link on to this Committee for America's Freedom. I'll give that again. Committee for America's Freedom, Box 601. King City, Missouri, 64463. Today I got a check, and it was made out to LARI, Box 601. That is fine. They all go to help me in my travels out there and to continue to work with us. But we want the people fully understand, unless the states ask for an extension, you will have to go into your local Department of Revenue to get a new ID, and you will not get that in a few minutes. It's going to take you many trips, and they are going to make copies of all the data that you bring in there. They're going to copy your birth certificate, your Social Security number, where you live. They're going to put that in a data file in a database in that state. Everybody in any state can link onto that. This has to be shared with all other states. The Department of Homeland Security, in their wisdom, thinks we need to share this globally. That means some foreign country can link into our database. This is going to be the country where these terrorists are coming from. So you tell me whether somebody in D.C. is looking out for our security or whether they want to have control over us. The answer is pretty obvious.
I really think it's so funny. You know, I went to the doctor today for something just minor, but one of the things you have to do is you have to sign this special form that says, understand that they have a privacy policy dedicated to protecting our policy. And I've read the privacy policy, and I know that they're trying to protect my privacy so other people won't know what's going on about my personal matters having to do with health. And then if you sit down and you read the privacy policy, what it is that they can release the information on you to just about anyone they want to, and anybody who wants to give that information, has nothing to do with protecting your policy. It has to do with taking away your privacy. You see, they have to use words to conceal what they're really up to. And they want the information on your health. They want to know what books you read, and that's why they're checking the various libraries to see what books people are reading. But, of course, the librarian can't tell you they're checking out. If you do anything at your bank, you cast a large check, or you put a large amount of money in the bank, they have to report that to the government. All of these things are on your permanent record. They have massive data files on all the law-abiding citizens. They're not tracking the terrorists, ladies and gentlemen. They're tracking the law-abiding citizens, and they're setting up these files. Not just that the FBI, the military has their files on you, the Office of Homeland Security has their files, and then they merge them all together so that they know everything about you. And we have a wonderful 4-tape set on what happened in China as the communists took in and how they were monitoring the people. We're talking about back in the 40s, and this one missionary was there. They knew the number of shirts he had in his drawer, the number of handkerchiefs he had in his bedroom, the number of pairs of socks he had. They were monitoring everything about him before they took over. And if you've never heard our 4-tape set on China, you really need to take that to understand. Fast forward now, really, 60 years to where we are today. And there are people who are collecting similar files on us. And if you have a grocery cart and you buy groceries, they're keeping track of what you buy at the grocery store. You buy things with a credit card. All those files are kept. They have gigantic dossiers on the American citizens, and you have to ask yourself, why? If you're out there in the listening audience, you have a question or comment, our telephone number 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. Jack, do you have a question?
Indeed. I wanted to know if the guest is aware of what Alex Jones has said. That's the first question.
No, what has Alex Jones said?
Well, what he said is numerous cities and towns have passed their own local ordinances prohibiting the Patriot Acts.
Well, no, this isn't the Patriot Act. This is simply RFID.
Right. I'm just thinking, Dr. Stan, that perhaps locally the people at the grassroots can force a mandate banning ID and all this other.
Let's see what Jim is doing, because he's working the state legislatures, and that covers a lot more people. What about the local communities passing resolutions?
No,
Jim, let him reply, please. Yeah.
I'm not aware of that. I think the biggest impact is when each state passes changes their state law to say, we will not go along with the Real ID Act. In Missouri, I want to pass a law that says the state cannot sell your personal information from your driver's license application or your tax returns. You mentioned the Patriot Act. Part of my 5 points to America's freedom is we need to repeal the Patriot Act, or as I call it, the Unpatriot Act, which allows your federal government to spy on your phone records, your bank accounts, and what have you. I guess you can get something done at the local level, but I think you're be much better if you do it at the state level to cover everything. You have to do whether you can supersede state law or not.
And I think really what's so interesting, of course, is that the federal government wanted your picture, and what they did, they went around to the states, and they actually paid the states, and they bought copies of the pictures off of all the driver's license, but they lied about it. They had to say, they said it was private companies that were doing this credit card, certainly a security, and it simply wasn't that case at all. They didn't want the American people to know that they want your picture, and of course they want to put that in the database so that we can, when they punch in your name, your picture will come up as well. Did you have another question, Jack?
Real quick, Dr. Stan, thank you for that. I'm going to call. I'm going to start getting on the phone with the legislators tomorrow. Let's see.
Are you in California?
No, he's in Michigan.
Michigan.
Oh, okay. And I was going to ask... about the KGB fellas, I remember Mikhail Gorbachev, that Nobel Peace Prize winner, supervised U.S. base closures in the early 90s. Where have you interviewed the source, or where is the source that can be verified of the KGB agents that are directing? And as Jeannie last night said, Homeland Security is the Nazi SS.
Okay, fine. Correct. Thanks so much, Jack. Let's go ahead and certainly Jack just did mention that Gorbachev had been consulted when we were closing our military bases. If anybody would like to verify that, why, of course, we have the information and the articles about it. Why would we actually have Mikhail Gorbachev be involved with the closing of our military bases? That just doesn't make sense. And of course, Jack is wondering about the KGB agents who are working in Washington, D.C. Is this reported in any of the major media, Jim?
That's true. Back to the original question. I got one news article about, I think his name was Primakov, I'm not sure.
Right, uh-huh.
That is one of the top KGB agents that's working at Department of Homeland Security.
Now, I know he's back in Moscow at the present time.
Oh,
I don't know if he was ever over here, but certainly he may very well have been. I've heard the same stories. I've just never been actually able to verify it. But nothing would surprise me.
That is when they get people who have done that. And so he said he's from Michigan. Paul Opsommer. I've been working with him very closely in Michigan to try and do that. I want to go a little bit farther than what Representative Opsommer is. He wants to get back where the states can at least sit down at the table and negotiate with the federal government on what kind of a security we have here. I'd rather just outright ban the real ID and then start to sit down so the states have some say in it. And I've also got an email sometime today I haven't had a chance to look at from somebody else in Michigan that wanted some more information. So we're making some inroads here, making more and more states aware that they need to take action to protect the citizens of their state.
Well, Jim, I think what you're really doing is really wonderful, and it's very courageous of you, and I'm just so glad that you're out there doing this. I've heard that other states, a number of states, had said we're not going to go along with the program. So the federal government, of course, is going to punish those states. They're going to punish people who do not want to go along with their agenda, because after all, that their job is to protect us from the wicked Osama bin Laden, who's hiding in a cave. Of course, he's been supposedly on dialysis all this time. I'm not quite sure how you manage dialysis hiding in a cave in Pakistan. I mean, it's a very, very sophisticated process. Being a physician, I can tell you that, you don't just sit down and just have your little dialysis. You have to be in a hospital doing it. In fact, there are a lot of reports that Osama bin Laden's been dead for a long time, but we sure need somebody to be afraid of, so I guess he's as good as anybody. But what they're really doing is playing on the fears of the American people. Do you ever have that feeling, Jim, that they're exploiting us, that they want us to be fearful so that we will knuckle under and do exactly as we're told?
I was just thinking, as you were talking, I said, why it's so difficult to catch Osama bin Laden? As long as he's loose, he's a threat. And people can fear him or any other terrorist attack on this nation. So as long as they can get the people to live in fear, it's easier to pass more laws or take action to control them, to know where they are, take away their freedom, invade their privacy. You're exactly right. You know, that's kind of what happened in Nazi Germany. You know, those people lived in fear there, and that was how that Hitler was able to gain control of them. Well, and there's a kind of a parallel that's going on here right now.
Well, you know, the one advantage we have they didn't have in Nazi Germany is we got the Internet. So if you're out there in the listening audience, and I want you to go up on the Internet after the program is over tomorrow, and I want you to Google in Osama bin Laden died, and you'll find literally hundreds of hits on Osama. In fact, that Osama bin Laden, there are many reliable sources that say he's been dead for some years, but we can't let the American people know that. The other thing is, of course, go to the FBI website, 10 Most Wanted Men, and notice what the FBI says about Osama bin Laden. They never even mention in the most wanted poster where they're offering a $5 million reward for his capture. They never once mention 9/11. My goodness, the government says he was responsible for 9/11, but I guess they never told the FBI. But go up and check it out on the Internet, ladies and gentlemen, and then go ahead and check out Jim Guest. Jim is our guest tonight, so remember, Jim Guest from Missouri, and the legislation that he has, and he has, certainly model legislation there that's being passed, and get hold of your legislators, and if you can help Jim in your state, if your state hasn't already passed legislation, certainly coming out against this identification card, here's something that you can do. Because I would like to suggest that we're not going to stop Osama bin Laden from taking away our freedom. Because, you know, the reason that Osama bin Laden attacked us is because we were free. And so we're not going to stop Osama bin Laden from taking away our freedom by taking away our freedom and requiring everybody to carry an identification card. And I wonder how many people out there really think that the terrorists are going to carry their identification card. So
I would say, it's difficult to get these terrorists to stop us at the border when they come in so we can get their picture and give them a card. You know, terrorists and criminals don't abide by the laws. So if they think they're going to pass a law to require everybody to get a real ID card, you know, they're not going to do it. Some people say, well, I'd feel a little bit more secure if I was on an airplane with a real ID card in my pocket. I said, yeah, the person sitting next to you is going to have a fake real ID card in his pocket if that makes you feel any better.
If I was on the plane, I would like to know that there was an air marshal on that plane to protect me. But you must understand, ladies and gentlemen, that the government is so concerned about airline safety that there's probably less than one air marshal in every 10 flights, probably far less than that. If the government was really concerned about our safety on the planes, they would have deflectors on those planes in case there was a surface-to-air missile fired at it. I can assure you that they have these deflectors on Air Force One to protect the president, but none of our commercial airliners have them. Israel has them on their planes because they want to protect their people from terrorism, but we don't put them on our planes because it's just, it's just too expensive.
You know, I always wonder, people say, why do you think you have to have a driver's license to be a terrorist? You can walk into a building with a briefcase and set a bomb, leave a bomb there. You can strap one to you. You can even drive a car without a driver's license. So to think that you're going to stop terrorism by requiring people to have a real ID, you know, that's not going to work. They can do that even without it, or very easily will they be able to make fake IDs. These crooks and counterfeiters are very good at it. It will take they've already said that it would take them a very short time to start selling counterfeit real ID bills. You talk about your trying to protect your identity. You know, all you have to do is about every day you find out somebody's security has been breached. It was only about a month ago that the state of Ohio lost a hard drive of all 64,000 state employees. That hard drive was lost with their bank data on it, their payroll data, their Social Security, and everything. You know, the Department of Homeland Security, their own transportation department, lost some data on over 100,000 of their employees here about a year ago. So before we even start putting all this data in our database in our state, we've already got it's difficult to protect it. So how in the world do you think that the employees in each state are going to protect your personal data when it's downloaded in there.
In fact, the Department of Veterans Affairs, apparently they lost all of the records on all of the veterans here. In fact, we got letters from the government saying somebody has stolen the records of from the Veterans Administration with your name and Social Security number and all your personal data on it. We want you to know they've stolen it. Now, why would they be that incompetent unintentionally? Or are they trying to frighten us that we need the government to, because somebody's trying to steal our identity? That's why we have to have a real ID card and with a chip in it, and maybe the next best thing will be simply to have everybody have a chip. So those terrorists won't be able to buy or sell unless they have the chip in their hand or maybe on their forehead. Ladies and gentlemen, what we're seeing is the most incredible scam of all time, and so many people are going along with it. Our guest has been Jim Guest, who's a very courageous man, taking a very courageous stand today. Well, Jim, you've got 3 minutes to wrap up the program.
Okay, very good. I would, so more people can, they can't get all this information down, if they can go online and, like I said, Google in Jim Guest, or Google in Laurie, L-A-R-I, space, real ID. They can bring up some information, and I can certainly use some support if they want to send a contribution to the Committee for America's Freedom, or they can just make it out to Laurie, Box 601, King City, Missouri, 64463. But I want everybody out there that's listening to know that the freedom for your future and your children and the generations to come is really on the line. You've got to take this seriously here, what our federal government has planned for us and what they're implementing. It's not too late. Like our forefathers, they fought and stood up for the freedom of this country, and we can do the same thing. Call your state legislator or U.S. legislator. Ask them where they stand on them and ask them why they are not protecting your freedom and not making their voices heard. You know, united we can stand on this thing and we can defeat it. We know that our voices can be heard when enough people speak out, and now is the time to do that. So I wouldn't say it's an uphill battle. We're making some good inroads on it. But when you're going against the federal government, they can bring pressures to bear on you and some people that's helping you. But then this is a battle that we cannot afford to lose. If you like the freedom you have now, then you'd better work to protect it.
Well, have you had any opposition? I mean, any people putting pressures on you?
Oh, indirect. I've had some pressures put on me and some of my staff members here that sort of make it difficult for us to get our job done, or some indirect threats. But then, the quest for freedom is strong enough that we're going to continue to battle forward.
Well, I certainly respect you for what you're doing, Jim, and certainly any time while you'd like to be on our programs. And I will call your secretary and try to get you on to our other programs. I think your message is important, and it's important to realize the effect that one person can have, one person with a vision, one person with virtue and honesty and courage. So I applaud your efforts, and certainly we need more legislators like you who are not there because, this is a way of getting power. They're there because they believe in this elusive concept of freedom under God, because without freedom, my life has very little meaning. God bless you. Thanks for everything you're doing, Jim.
Okay, thank you.
Good night. God
Good
bless.
Night.
All right. I hope you enjoyed our program with Jim Guest. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and I think that Jim is a very, very courageous individual. He's a legislator in the state of Missouri, and, of course, he is trying to get people to understand that this whole thing is a scam that's been planned a long time. They've always wanted, of course, to have everybody numbered, everybody having a card, and one day, of course, they want to get everybody chipped. They know exactly what they're doing. They just don't want the American people, and they justify what they're doing into protecting us against the wicked Osama bin Laden. So, certainly we have an excellent book. It's called Spy Chips, and we have a number of fascinating interviews with Catherine Albrecht and Liz McIntyre, and several other people actually on these ideas for animals. They want to get the animals checked, chipped. They want to get the people chipped. They want to get a chip in your passport. They want a chip in your driver's license. They want to know everything about you. They're collecting dossiers. And if you have any question in the collecting dossiers, the book, it's entitled Fixing Intelligence by Major General William Odom, who headed NSA, the most secret of all of our spy agencies. And of course, in his book, written in 2003, he could not tell us what was going on, but he could ask questions like, should the CIA be assassinating people? Should the CIA have people planted in the media, journalists? Should the CIA and should the Army be keeping dossiers on American citizens? Do you think they should? Well, we hope many of you out there want to get the books by check. You can certainly specifically order the tapes that we have with Catherine Albrecht and other tapes on the chipping of the animals. You can get a copy of this program. Our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. But how do we really understand what's going on? Well, we understand really by understanding that there really are secret societies out there. In fact, a woman once said that an understanding of the forces that have shaped the events of the 20th century is predicated not upon facts to be learned, but rather upon secrets to be discovered. And that's why my book, The Brotherhood of Darkness, the book or the DVD, my talk on the Forbidden Secret, our four tapes or four CDs set on The Secret, Behind the Secret, the award-winning DVD, The Secret Mysteries of America's Beginning, and Riddles in Stone, and The Atlantis Connection, and The Emergence. All of these DVDs are so vitally important, because you're not going to hear these things elsewhere. Nobody's going to take you into the history of this movement towards the world government. They're going to tell you there's a movement towards world government, but they will never tell you what energizes the people behind this. And, of course, this is long-range planning of thousands of years, and it's all coming to pass right now. We do carry one book written by a Satanist named Manly P. Hall. It's called The Secret Destiny of America. It is actually not listed in our catalog. You'll have to request it specifically. The Secret Destiny of America by Manly P. Hall. We carry his other book, The Secret Teachings of All Ages. We do not list them on our catalog because we don't want you to think we endorse what he says. But if you're a researcher and you really want to understand what energizes the people who are intent upon destroying our freedom and bringing about the world government, then The Secret Destiny of America explains to you exactly why we are fighting in the Middle East today for democracy. So anyway, our telephone number, 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. You really need to get my three pamphlets set on the occult hierarchy. That's the occult hierarchy. And please don't forget, we're having an all-day seminar on the 28th of October. That's a Sunday. It's going to be a great seminar. Hope you can make it. And if you're interested, we'd love to hear from you. 1-888-1-800-544. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here. Our guest this evening is Dr. Russell Blaylock, and we're talking about Alzheimer's disease and of course, the danger of immunizations that prime and stimulate the immune system in the brain. And, of course, this is manifested through the glial cells there, and of course it will result in the destruction of the brain and manifested by so many degenerative diseases, certainly in the brain. So pick the story up there, Russell, please.
I've done a lot of primary research in the area of Alzheimer's disease, looking at what is causing the inflammation. It's agreed now that most likely Alzheimer's disease is a chronic inflammatory disease of the brain, and that all of these things with the amyloid and the different things that accumulate in the brain are not the primary cause. They're the result of chronic inflammation. We know if you inflame the brain, you get these very same types of amyloid plaques. Well, there's been certain observations in Alzheimer's disease they've known quite a long time, is that people with Alzheimer's disease have a very high level of free radical generation in their brain. They have very high levels of inflammatory chemicals in their brain called cytokines, complement, interferon, all the different immune chemicals in the brain are significantly elevated. They know that there's very low antioxidant enzymes in the brain, like catalase and superoxide dismutase and glutathione, things that normally protect the brain. But in the Alzheimer's brain, these levels are very low. They know Alzheimer's patients have very low vitamin C and carotenoids and vitamin E and B1, B6, folate, B12 in the brain and in their body. They have low selenium brain levels. They know that they have very high homocysteine levels in the brain. So there's a lot of different things that we've observed in the brain of people with Alzheimer's disease. But now we're beginning to understand that chronic inflammation can cause all of these things, that they have a single causation or process that's producing the damage that leads to the progressive loss of the mind. The question has now arisen, what is causing the inflammation? And so they start looking at it, and they make quite a few observations. For instance, we know that people who have Alzheimer's disease have a high incidence of infection in their oral cavity and in their brain of herpes simplex virus. But it lies dormant in most people. But the people who have recurrent episodes of mouth ulcers from this herpes virus have a very high incidence of Alzheimer's disease. This herpes simplex virus in the brain, when it becomes active, triggers the activation of the brain's immune system. And the primary immune cell in the brain is the microglia. So when this cell goes from a resting state to where it's active, it begins to circulate in the brain tissue, and it secretes some very damaging chemicals, mainly the inflammatory cytokines and glutamate, which is an excitotoxin. And it secretes these chemicals in very high concentrations and over a very prolonged period of time. So we know that this virus can do that. We also know that people who have high levels of insulin in their blood tend to have high incidence of Alzheimer's disease. And so that type 2 diabetics, people with metabolic syndrome, have an incidence of Alzheimer's disease twice as high as the normal population. And we know that in people with diabetes of type 2, the insulin triggers inflammation in the brain. So that the high chronic elevation of insulin is what's causing the brain to be inflamed. In that case, we know that mercury and aluminum are very powerful activators of brain immunity, so that the brain becomes inflamed by triggering of these microglia by mercury and aluminum.
All right, we hold that thought there. We'll be back in just a moment with our special guest, Dr. Russell Blaylock, as we explore the things that predispose people to Alzheimer's disease. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest is Dr. Russell Blaylock. Now, you'd mentioned earlier about chlamydia. A lot of people, you know, because of the promiscuity that we see in our country today, we'll get these chronic chlamydia infections, and they really get into the bloodstream or hide in the cells. And what about mycoplasma? Certainly these infections seem to be fairly prevalent. Would either one of those be playing a part in this?
Yeah, any microorganism can do it, whether it's Lyme disease, whether it's mycoplasma, whether it's a virus, whether it's chlamydia. All of these are known to do this. In fact, they took animals and they sprayed a mist of chlamydia in their nose, and they developed the very changes in their brain we see with Alzheimer's disease. So we know that any infection, because it triggers chronic activation of the brain's immune inflammation system, it produces the changes of Alzheimer's disease. But it's not just infections. We know that mercury does that. Mercury in extremely small concentrations, what we call nanomolar, 10,000ths of a millionth of a mole of mercury, can easily activate microglia and do so for decades. We know that sometimes things like a stroke or head trauma can activate these microglia and brain inflammation, and that's what produces a lot of the damage with brain injury and with strokes. We know that certain dietary things like omega-6 fatty acids, corn oil, safflower oil, sunflower oil, peanut oil, soybean oil, those oils increase brain inflammation. And so if you have the virus and you're eating the omega-6 oils, it makes it even worse. So the disease progresses much faster. We know that nutrient deficiencies can leave the brain vulnerable. For instance, if you're deficient in omega-3 oil, like the fish oil, DHA and EPA, that makes the brain infinitely more susceptible to inflammation and this destructive process. And if you consume more of these omega-3 fats, the fish oils, it reduces brain inflammation. It can do so significantly. And the DHA helps repair the damage that was done.
Could I just really ask you, how many of those capsules of the omega-3 oil should you be taking a day? Will one do you? Should you have three or four of them, or what?
Well, you should take it at least 2 to 3 grams of the omega-3 fatty acid that has mostly the DHA component.
Right.
The DHA is what does most of the protecting of the brain. Too much EPA can make it.
Oh, I'm sorry, hold that thought. We'll be right back here. Okay, we'll go right ahead.
If you consume too much of the EPA component of the fish oil, it suppresses immunity too much, and it can make you where you tend to bleed very easily. Kind of like taking an aspirin, too many aspirin where you start bleeding. The DHA doesn't have that effect. The DHA is the most protective of the brain. So you should take at least 1,000 to 2,000 milligrams of DHA a day. But what we're learning here is that this combined chronic brain inflammation excitotoxicity is the primary process, but a lot of things can trigger that process. Whether it's viruses or heavy metals or infections or trauma or bad diet, all of these things can make it worse. Well, one of my big concerns was that, if activating the body's immune system activates the brain's immune system at the same time, wouldn't that be dangerous for neurodegenerative diseases? Well, we've known for quite a while now that people who have early Alzheimer's disease, if they develop an infection, they progress much faster and can become severely demented within a week or a few days. We know that if they're exposed to different heavy metals like mercury, aluminum, the same thing can happen because of the activation of the immune system. Well, the question then comes, wouldn't it be dangerous to vaccinate people who are elderly, because we know a certain percentage of them are going to develop Alzheimer's disease? Wouldn't it be dangerous overstimulating their immune system? Well, that's what I've been in rather intense research looking at, and there's quite a bit of a number of studies that are now showing that, in fact, when you vaccinate, you cause very intense activation of the brain's immune system. And it's activated for very prolonged periods of time because vaccines are made of two components. One is the virus or the bacteria that you're trying to immunize against, and the other is an immune stimulant called an adjuvant, immune adjuvant. These are different lipids or things like mercury, aluminum, MSG that they put in the vaccine to make your body have a very intense immune reaction. The problem with that is that it not only activates the brain immune system rather intensely, but it can do so for very prolonged periods of time, sometimes as long as 1 to 2 years, which means this is very unnatural. When you naturally get infected, what happens is you have a virus, your body's immune system attacks the virus, and in about 2 or 3 days, it succeeds in the attack, and then it shuts off all the immune system so that you stop releasing these harmful chemicals, and that occurs in your brain as well. Well, most of us know when you get a virus, you feel really bad. You feel achy, you're tired, you're depressed, you're irritable, you're sleepy, and then you have difficulty sleeping at night when you want to sleep. You just generally don't feel good. We call that sickness behavior, and it's a neurological effect. It's because your immune system in your brain is hyperactive, pouring out all of these inflammatory chemicals and excitotoxins trying to kill the infection, and it's disrupting your brain temporarily. When the infection is over, it shuts down, and you feel really good. And you know, most of us notice once you get over an infection, you feel a lot better than you did even before. And that's because of the reparative process that takes place. Well, when you have a vaccine, because of this constant immune stimulation, it's like having the inflamed brain and the sickness behavior that never goes away. And we know that in the beginning, the worst part is when you feel like you have the flu or a virus, and then as that subsides, then you can be depressed for very long periods of time, and there's this smoldering inflammation in the brain that's destroying brain cells and brain connections, which is triggering the process that causes Alzheimer's disease and Parkinson's disease. We've done this in a number of experimental animals of every species and found that this is a repeatable effect. If you vaccinate these animals, they begin to get destruction of brain cells, and they have difficulty performing mental tasks. In other words, things like memory and learning mazes and things. They become irritable. They become antisocial because of the brain effect of that immunization, that vaccine. Now, there's a phenomenon called priming. And what happens when you have an infection or you get a virus, the brain cells, the microglia, become primed. That is, they're not fully activated, but they're on a state of alert. The next time you get an infection or you get a vaccination, those prime cells will overreact to a very great extent, so they secrete huge amounts of inflammatory cytokines and very large amounts of glutamate, producing excitotoxic damage to the brain. And we've observed, and this has been proven a number of times, that when people who have mild cognitive loss or early Alzheimer's, if they get infected and they develop the sickness behavior, their disease progresses very rapidly. So we know that this occurs in humans exactly the way it does in animals, and that in animals you can precipitate Alzheimer's disease by vaccinating all the changes in their brain. It's just like Alzheimer's disease. So a lot of people out there, these elderly, are on the borderline, and they go and get their flu vaccine yearly, are increasing their risk of Alzheimer's disease dramatically. Dr. Feudenberg, who's a world-renowned immunologist, did a study with some coworkers and found that people age 55 or above who took the flu vaccine every year for 5 years increased their risk of developing Alzheimer's disease tenfold, a of 1,000%. So this is a dramatic increase in Alzheimer's disease, which confirms what they've found in all of these experimental studies, that if you stimulate the brain, particularly in the older population, you run the risk of dramatically increasing their risk of developing Alzheimer's disease or Parkinson's disease, because the same process occurs in Parkinson's. One of the other things that can activate the brain's immune system and these microglia is exposure to pesticides, even in low doses. And this is the strongest connection to Parkinson's disease, is exposure to a pesticide called rotenone, and it activates the microglia in another part of the brain that's responsible for Parkinson's disease. And the dose needed to do that is very small. And they found out that the people that are susceptible to it are the ones who cannot detoxify the rotenone in their liver and their cells, so it tends to accumulate in higher concentration in their brain, and that activates these microglia and produces the destruction. They've also found that if you take experimental animals, expose them to rotenone in very low concentrations, where they are not necessarily developing Parkinson's disease, but have some of the changes, and then you vaccinate them, they enter into Parkinson's disease very rapidly. And that's because the vaccine produces such intense activation of these primed microglia in that part of the brain that they get explosive onset of Parkinson's disease. So the people who are lining up to get their flu vaccine are running a very high risk of developing a neurodegenerative disease of either of these types and increasing their cognitive problems. The inflammation connection between other diseases has also raised the suspicion. We've known that people who have atherosclerosis, heart attacks, and strokes have a high incidence of Alzheimer's disease. We know people who have diabetes have a high incidence of Alzheimer's disease. It's twice as high in diabetics, particularly type 2 diabetics, and people with metabolic syndrome, syndrome X. We know that depressed patients are much more common among the Alzheimer's patients, or will develop Alzheimer's disease. And that's because all of these disorders are inflammatory disorders. They're all due to overstimulation of immunity. And one of the things we know is you begin to age, your immune system becomes overactive. At least part of it does, the part that's secreting these dangerous pro-inflammatory cytokines and causing your brain to secrete excess glutamate. The older you get, the more intense this reaction becomes. But when they looked at Alzheimer's patients, that immune reaction is even greater, much higher. And as their disease progressed, the intensity of that immune reaction also increased tremendously. So as they began to get into severe Alzheimer's, they're having very high levels of brain inflammation and microglial activation. I've seen one of the PET scans on people age 75. One was a normal person, age 75, and the other one was a person with Alzheimer's disease. And they used a scanner that the dye particularly showed activated microglia in the brain. The normal 75-year-old, you just saw a very light activation of the microglia. In the Alzheimer's patient, it was extensive over the whole brain. So we have ways in living Alzheimer's patients and elderly to measure microglial activation. And that's what we're seeing in this disease, and that's what vaccination produces. So I think we're running a great risk giving this great number of vaccines to the elderly.
Well, I'm curious now, why does the Centers for Disease Control then urge, you know, doctors and tell doctors to give these to the elderly when certainly there's no evidence that the flu shot does any good there? That's the thing that really disturbs me.
Yeah, if you're getting a vaccine that gives you almost no protection, but it significantly raises your risk of developing neurodegenerative disorder of a very serious nature.
Yeah, you really have to sort of ask yourself why. Well, we're going to be back in just a moment or two with Dr. Russell Blaylock right here at the Radio Liberty. Well, Russell, certainly we see a much higher incidence of Alzheimer's disease in America than they do in many other countries, don't we?
Yeah, and we're starting to see it increase in some of these other countries that are imitating our vaccine policy and some of our dietary policies. For instance, we're seeing a significant increase in Japan. We're seeing a high incidence in Ireland and the U.K.
Are they, of course, having the same vaccine policy, encouraging people to take this useless influenza vaccine?
Absolutely, particularly the U.K. And Canada. You know, and recently in New Jersey, for instance, they have a policy now that everyone will have to take the flu vaccine, whether they want to or not, by court order. And this includes all pregnant women, small babies, teenagers, elderly. They will be forced to take the flu vaccine, whether they want to or not.
Wouldn't we need some sort of a class action suit and bring these things out in court? Would that do any good?
Well, we need a class action suit. We need to stop it. And if we find that these people were getting financial payments from the vaccine company, somebody needs to go to jail.
Right. Well, I certainly think, in fact, I think some of the people in the vaccine companies ought to go to jail, too.
Absolutely.
And because there's no way they could not know about the things that you're able to find as an independent researcher.
Yeah, well, there's just an enormous amount of research in this area. This is a very hot area of research in neuroscience. So there's no excuse for them not knowing. And if you're going to start vaccinating people with half dozen vaccines, I think it behooves you to go examine the literature and find out what effects this has. And this is something that is very well demonstrated. It's not speculation. It's something that's proven. You know, this is a mechanism that's worked out right down to the molecular level in the brain cell, the neuron. So we know what happens.
Well, I think it's so vitally important that this information gets out, which is why I'm so pleased that you would come on with us. And I know that you're working certainly with others to try to get the truth out about the danger of vaccination. And it's simply, you know, if you look at it objectively and you see what's happening to our population and the increasing incidence of so many diseases, and at least some of these are directly traceable to the immunizations, and certainly instances of autism and ADHD and certainly neurodevelopmental abnormalities. When 1 in 6 children in America has a neurodevelopmental abnormality, and the government admits that and then says, but we don't know why, but we can assure you it's not vaccinations. Where's the proof it's not the vaccinations?
Well, and then here we have this very strong evidence that in the developing brain, if you vaccinate a child, not only do you get these reactions we're talking about in the adult, but it alters the formation of the child's brain. The nerve cells and the migration patterns in the brain are disrupted. This has been proven time and time again. So there's absolute proof of the danger of these extensive vaccination of these children. And this is a criminal act by these vaccine companies. They should be placed, you know, the executives who are in charge of this should be placed in prison. They have destroyed the lives and killed tens of thousands of children in terms of killing and millions in terms of damaging their brain for life. For instance, the studies have shown that if you activate the immune system of a pregnant woman, it activates the microglia in the fetus's brain.
Hold that thought. We'll be right back here, Russell. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and Russell was simply pointing out the criminal activity of our vaccine manufacturers, and certainly, you know, doing everything they can to get the pediatricians and the CDC to recommend this widespread vaccination of our children. But of course, Russell was just simply saying that when you give the flu shot to a woman, a pregnant woman, of course, this is now recommended by the CDC, but that certainly when you turn on the immune system in a woman, a pregnant woman, of course, it influences her, you know, brain, but it also goes across the placenta and influences the brain of the developing brain of the child in her womb. So could you give us any more information on that?
Yeah, and what these studies have shown that if you immunize the mother, it activates the microglia immune cell inside of the fetus's brain. and that for the rest of that child's life, their microglia will overreact. So that at any period of their life, if they're exposed to any of these things we said, food allergies, vaccines, mercury, aluminum, viruses, get infections, their brain's going to overreact. They're going to have inflammatory reaction in their brain and a much higher risk of developing neurodegenerative diseases, seizures, all sorts of problems. So this is known. Now, the other thing that's absolutely known, and this was, to me, unbelievable, when they looked at a large number of pregnant women, they found out that if they developed an infection during their pregnancy, a virus, the incidence of schizophrenia in their children was significantly elevated. Also, the incidence of autism and other behavioral problems when the child became an adult. Well, at first they thought, well, the virus must be passing through the placenta into the baby, and that's the problem. Well, they found out, no, that wasn't it. It was because the mother's immune system, when it was activated, these immune cytokines, these immune chemicals, passed through the placenta into the baby and activated the baby's microglia, and that this was altering the formation of the baby's brain and producing an overreactive brain inflammatory system so that they develop schizophrenia or autism or behavioral problems later in life. Now, here's this unbelievable policy to vaccinate and encourage the vaccination of every pregnant woman with the flu vaccine, which is going to do exactly what they did in these experimental studies. It's going to activate the mother's immune system, which is going to activate the baby's microglia, which is going to dramatically increase the incidence of schizophrenia, behavioral problems, and autism in the offspring. Yet, they're totally ignoring this. So we're going to see in the next 10 to 20 years a tremendous increase in the number of schizophrenics and autistic cases as well. And no one's paying any attention to this, but this is a very well-demonstrated phenomenon occurring in pregnant women. And when I first learned of this, and then I saw this policy of vaccinating every pregnant woman, I just couldn't believe it. You're condemning these poor women to having schizophrenic children. When they're in their teen years or in their early 20s, they're going to be schizophrenic because of this idiotic public health policy.
Well, is there any way we can, of course, get to the public health officials and point out what they're doing? Or is there any way we can get this information to Congress so we could get some of these government policies reversed? Because it is indeed the government policy that is encouraging doctors to, and obstetricians to, vaccinate pregnant women even in the first trimester of the pregnancy when it'll do the most damage. I mean, this is just totally illogical.
It's illogical, and it's infuriating. It's terrifying that you would condemn millions of women to this risk.
And, of course, what a terrible thing to do is to destroy the brain of a child, and that is exactly what they're doing. It's unconscionable. It's criminal activity. It's going on here, and all we hear is about how everybody's so concerned about the children. But are they really? That's the question.
Well, they're destroying the lives of millions of children. I mean, when you look at the incidence of Alzheimer's, one in 150, one in 85 male children, that's millions of small children whose lives have been ruined.
And with autism, these are the children with autism or the autism spectrum disorders.
Right.
Well, we're going to be back here in just a moment or two with Dr. Russell Blaylock. And remember that, one in 160 children has autism, but about one in about every 80 boys has it, because it's much more frequent in boys, somewhere between 60 and 80, one in every 60 or 80 boys, and one of those could be your grandchildren. And remember, one in six American children has some sort of a neurodevelopmental abnormality, but the government insists that it's not related to vaccination. But how do they know? Well, they don't. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here. Our guest is Dr. Russell Blaylock. We're talking about Alzheimer's disease. We're talking about the toxins that are in the vaccines. And, of course, it's not simply the mercury alone. It's the aluminum that's in there as well. And the aluminum and the mercury seem to be synergistic. In other words, they work together to be destructive and to prime the brain for inflammation. Would that be an accurate statement, Russell?
Right, that's exactly the way it occurs. But the extent of all of this is so mind-boggling. What you have to realize is that the vaccine proponents, number one, are being paid a lot of money by vaccine companies. These vaccine companies are paying a lot of money out to politicians and public health authorities and physicians who sit on the vaccine boards of the American Academy of Pediatrics. All of this has been proven in investigations. And so these people have a vested interest in telling their fellow physicians to give these vaccines. Well, the poor pediatrician, he's busy. He doesn't read this literature. He knows nothing about brain immune reactions and excitotoxicity. And so he does what his society recommends. And so you have the average child going in and getting 9 vaccines at once. And they never think, well, that's 9 doses of very powerful immune adjuvants being injected in a child in one day.
And, of course, most people don't even consider the danger of the aluminum, the alum, which is in these vaccines, supposedly here. And they've taken the mercury out of childhood vaccines, and that's a half-truth. They've taken the mercury out of the childhood vaccines, but they've left it in the vaccines that are given to children, like the influenza vaccine. And, you know, a half-truth is no better than a lie. They're lying to the American people, and people have to really understand that. Why would they take the mercury out of childhood vaccines but leave it in the vaccines given to children? Or why don't they insist that the child get a mercury-free vaccine? Why don't the public health officials do that if they're really concerned about public health? And these are the questions that we really have to ask. And is it possible that they know and they don't care? I'm sure the average public health official doesn't understand, but the information is there. Russell, have you written an article on this yet?
Yes, I've just completed 2 articles that are going into peer-reviewed journals that describes all of this process in some detail. And I'm planning on putting out quite a few.
Well, I hope as soon as you have any, please get them to us. Hold that thought. We'll be back in just a moment here. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest is Dr. Russell Blaylock. And, of course, we're talking about the danger of vaccines and how they contribute to Alzheimer's disease and Parkinson's disease. And, Russell, before we go on, I'd like you to get out your website, where people can certainly get your books, although we do carry them ourselves, they can get information that you have put out there, and also they can learn how to get hold of your newsletter. Would you like to get that website out?
Sure. It's www.russellblaylockmd.com. That's RussellBlaylockMD.com.
All right, fine. And Russell's information, his research is impeccable. You'll certainly want to have that for your own use. Well, certainly, as soon as you have those articles, as I said, and then they could be distributed, please get me copies of them. We'd love to. I certainly wouldn't want to put them out before they get into the peer-reviewed journals. How soon do you think they'll be published?
I think one is coming out in March, and we're waiting on the final approval of the second one. One is in Czechoslovakia, and it's written in Czech, so it's not in English, but it's in Czechoslovakian, so that's already published.
Well, that won't do me a bit of good.
The other one that's coming out soon is a book by Neil Miller called The Vaccine Safety Manual. I wrote the foreword to the book. It's a very extensively researched book that goes through each vaccine, what we know about complications, effectiveness, etc. But in the introduction, I go through this whole process that I discussed on your program in great detail. So I would recommend when Neil Miller's book comes out, The Vaccine Safety Manual, that they get a copy. It should be out, I think, this summer. It may come out sooner than that, but as soon as it comes out, I'll let you know.
All right, fine. No, I read your forward that you sent me a copy of it. It was very, very well done. I was very, very impressed by it. Well, let's get a little bit into what we can do for Alzheimer's disease. In other words, let's imagine we have somebody with early Alzheimer's disease. There's no question, though, that it's real. So how do we go about approaching it from a medical point of view? Certainly, you mentioned the staying away from the omega-6 oils and getting the omega-3 oils. You've mentioned the antioxidants, the importance of those. You elsewhere had mentioned the significance of iron, because iron seems to also be one of these things that tends to trigger inflammation. And is there any way that people can get rid of some of that iron that they have? What about IP6 rice bran? Would that tend to help?
Yeah, the IP6, unfortunately, it's an immune stimulant, so you might not want to do that, but it will remove iron.
Well,
many of your flavonoids, like curcumin and quercetin, also remove iron. Coenzyme Q10 removes iron, so that's a better way to do it. One of the important protections against mercury is selenium. Selenium methionine is the form you take, but it's about 200 micrograms a day. And it is highly protective of the brain against mercury toxicity. And we've done a number of studies that indicate that if the selenium levels in the brain are low, it dramatically increases excitotoxicity, one of these central processes. So making sure that you have all your B vitamins, your C and E, particularly the natural form, will add a lot of protection against this. Some of the flavonoids like curcumin and quercetin, in combination, are very powerful at inhibiting brain inflammation. And studies are now being done in human populations with curcumin to see if it'll reduce Alzheimer's disease. Some of the early results show that it does seem to significantly slow the course of even severe Alzheimer's. In animal studies, it can completely prevent the Alzheimer's disease. Things like blueberry extract, which is a high concentrated extract, in animal studies, completely prevents Alzheimer's disease and hereditary Alzheimer's in animals.
Well, now, was that the resveratrol in that, or do we know what it is?
No, this is the blueberry extract,
all right,
not the grape extract. Now, resveratrol is very important. One study has recently shown that with high caloric intake, with sugar and such, resveratrol will reverse the damage by the sugar, and the organs of old animals appear younger. So this is quite an exciting thing that it can preserve the young pathology of the organs, including brain. The resveratrol is high on the list of things to protect you. White tea contains components that prevent the microglial cell overactivation. Silymarin, even in low doses, was very powerful at preventing brain microglial cell activation. So the milk thistle extract, the silymarin, is very important. Avoiding pesticides use in your house is very important, because, like I said, even small doses are associated with both Alzheimer's disease and Parkinson's, because it increases brain inflammation.
Now, would these be insecticides or that you would use to spray for ants, things like that?
Yeah, I wouldn't use any of those indoors.
All right.
You can use borax. Borax solutions work just as well.
All right.
But the avoid MSG, hydrolyzed protein, caseinate, all these MSG compounds need to be avoided in processed foods.
No, what about aspartame? And we didn't mention that at all, but you've written extensively on that. Will aspartame contribute to Alzheimer's or Parkinson's?
Oh, absolutely, because of several things. One of the aspartame has an excitotoxin in it, aspartic acid. Plus, it breaks down into formaldehyde. Formaldehyde has been shown to attach to the DNA and break the DNA strand. Well, one of the things that's a problem in Alzheimer's disease is fragility of the DNA. It's very fragile. And so if you're drinking aspartame then that means it's going to break the DNA very easily in the Alzheimer's brain and cause an extreme toxicity. So I'd avoid any aspartame. I would avoid all vaccination. The best way to make sure your immune system is working properly is to take a multivitamin, eat a good diet, and avoid omega-6 fats. Then you don't need vaccination. Exercise has been shown to be very protective against Alzheimer's, as well as any neurodegenerative diseases. When you exercise just moderately, say 30 minutes every day of brisk walking or light weights, it's been shown to stimulate brain connection growth in the brain. And it makes the brain secrete what we call trophic factors, which help repair the brain cells. So exercise is very, very important. Avoiding obesity is very important because as you gain fat, particularly abdominal fat inside your abdomen, it secretes inflammatory chemicals, particularly interleukin 1 and 6 and leptin, which produces brain inflammation. And we know there's a strong correlation between obesity and Alzheimer's disease. Avoid sugar and refined carbohydrates. They produce reactions in brain cells called advanced glycation end products and glycation reactions, which dramatically increases free radical generation in the brain. And studies have shown there's a strong correlation between that and Alzheimer's disease for the very same reason. It produces inflammation. Avoid aluminum. Don't drink public water because it has aluminum added to it and fluoride. Fluoraluminum also is very brain destructive. If you put lemon in your water, it dramatically increases the absorption of the aluminum. Pancakes, biscuits, foods using baking powder all have aluminum in it, and it's a major source of intake of aluminum in the human diet. Don't cook in aluminum cookware. Look on the label of medications and make sure there's not added aluminum, which you frequently have. So those are things you need to look out for, is aluminum. If you have mercury fillings in your mouth, I would encourage you to have them removed and replaced with ceramic fillings. You can go to the organization, the International Association of Oral Medicine and Toxicology, on the internet, and they'll find a physician or dentist near you that can safely remove them. So those things are very important as well. Now, in women, we know Alzheimer's is much more common in women than men. And one of the strong connections is when they reach menopause, they quit producing estrogen. Estrogen is very protective of the brain. And we know that when they lose their estrogen, their brain becomes more inflamed. When they add estrogen by taking natural hormones, it reduces brain inflammation and helps protect them against Alzheimer's disease. Now, some physicians will quote studies that said, oh, we gave women hormone replacement and found it didn't offer any protection. Well, that's Premarin. That's not natural hormones. That's the equine estrogens, which are toxic. And they use the methoxyprogesterone, which breaks down into a number of neurotoxic compounds. Normal progesterone is metabolized in the brain into two protective components, which do not come from the artificial progesterone that women are commonly given. So that's why those tests didn't show any benefit. But natural hormones are very brain protective.
Well, now, where would you get these natural progesterone?
Usually you get them through compounding pharmacists. You can have your doctor send a prescription to the compounding pharmacist, and he can make them up for you. Suzanne Summers has led the charge on natural hormones. She's done an excellent job. She's really done some good research, and I would recommend her books on natural hormones.
Suzanne Summers?
Right. She has a number of books on natural hormones.
All right.
But she's very knowledgeable about that. But the exercise is important. Of course, avoiding stress. And faith is very important because, as all Christians know, the stronger your faith, the more serene you are, the less you're affected by stress, more relaxed you are because of your faith. So having strong faith is very, very important to protecting against these processes. But those are the major things to protect yourself.
And I think you're just going to have to learn to say no to your doctor when he wants you to take those vaccines, because especially when they want to give you the influenza vaccine. Especially, I mean, they've got more new vaccines coming down the line. They got the pneumococcal vaccine. They want to give it to every elderly individual, and three or four others, you know, and I think the doctors are really very, very sincere. They really want to help you, but you know, like, you got to just say no way.
Yeah, it's not that the doctor and themselves know any of this and are doing things that are purposely harmful. They're trusting their specialty society. You know, the specialty society, the American Academy of Family Practice, the American Academy of Pediatrics, is telling them that this is the thing to do and they're saving lives and they should encourage their patients to get these vaccines. Well, they just think that, well, they know what they're talking about and they looked into this and they know the safety. And so they do it without a second thought because they're busy. And they don't take the time to research this or listen to people who have. But I can tell them they're making a dreadful error, and it's time for them to start listening to somebody other than their specialty society.
Well, you know, I'll tell you what, as a physician, when a patient comes in and starts to tell you something about medicine, you immediately go on the defensive. I know I always did. Until I began to realize that sometimes maybe they did have something worthwhile and begin listening to them and taking the material they offered, and sometimes it was very instructive.
Well, that's what we find is as you get older and you practice medicine, you learn your patients can teach you a lot.
Right.
you know, I remember back during the days when I thought all the environmental stuff was a lot of hooey, and a patient came to me saying that he was damaged by pesticides and had these terrible neurological symptoms. I thought he was crazy, and he gave me a bundle of research articles, and I read them. I was amazed. I didn't know any of that.
No.
And so now, in light of these new studies showing that even very tiny doses of pesticides and herbicides can have profound effects on neurodegeneration, you know, I'm thankful that he showed me that material. But all of this has been a learning experience for me. You know, I didn't know anything about vaccines when I was in practice 15 years ago. You know, I was just like everybody else. I thought that was a thing to do. You know, it's only after a lot of digging in the research and learning some very complex things about how brain and immune system interact that I've come to this understanding. And I realize my colleagues have no clue as to any of these mechanisms. You know, people assume that neurosurgeons know everything about the brain, but a lot of my colleagues didn't know a lot about how brain functions and neuroscience. What they knew is the techniques of neurosurgery. They knew some basic things about brain function. But when you get into the molecular biology of synapses and dendrites and how brain forms during development, interactions with immune receptors and the numerous receptors and cell signaling, they have no idea what you're talking about. They're as lost as a cab driver. So, you know, people need to understand physicians don't know everything about the human body. They don't know everything that can happen. You know, they've been told they know that in medical school, and they allowed the propaganda to get to them, and they believe it. But, you know, I came to a shocking realization. There was a heck of a lot I didn't know.
Well, I'm so glad that you now have the time to do all this research, because I sure don't, but I depend on you and certainly one or two others that certainly have done the research, gone to the literature. It's all there. Of course, the computer is a wonderful, wonderful way, because most of these articles can be obtained certainly by one or another means, And, of course, then you can begin to pull down the information, read it, study it, putting it together. And certainly I've found that through the years that Dr. Blaylock's research is impeccable, and you can bet your life on it. I will tell you that one of the big problems is an awful lot of people are betting their lives on a losing system. And that's why we've gone from one person every 33 having cancer at the beginning of the last century to about one person every one or two, every two or three. One from one in 33 people would die from cancer, now to one in every two or three. And there's something wrong with these statistics. Well, not that there's anything wrong with the statistics, is what we're doing. Well, our guest has been Dr. Russell Blaylock. We've been talking about Alzheimer's disease and other neurodevelopmental abnormalities. We'll be right back in just a moment to wrap up tonight's program. Well, Russell, you got 3 minutes to wrap up the program here, and then we'll let you go.
One of the things I would tell patients, and particularly mothers bringing their children to the doctor, is you're going to have to start understanding that you're in charge, not the physician. You're just listening to his advice, and stop letting physicians intimidate you and be arrogant to you. I'm seeing more arrogance in physicians jumping down patients' throat if they dare offer anything. You need to realize that they don't know these things that we've been talking about, and you need to realize you're paying for it. You're paying for their services, their advice, and if you decide not to take it, that's perfectly your right. And your obligation is to take care of your child or your loved one, not to please the doctor. On that note, I think that, we've got to change our whole perspective of this doctor-patient relationship as being an interaction rather than dominance by the physician who's going to talk down to you as if you were a child. And tell you you're going to do this or they're going to throw you out of their office. They need to be taken down a notch or two.
Well, of course, we have a number of excellent books. We carry Neil Miller's small little book on vaccines. When the larger book is available, we'll be carrying that one as well. Certainly we carry Dr. Russell Blaylock's book, Health and Nutrition Secrets That Can Save Your Life. My wife uses that as sort of a Bible. That's Health and Nutrition Secrets That Can Save Your Life. And then, of course, the Natural Strategies for Cancer Patients and Excitotoxins, The Taste That Kills. These are three excellent books which are available through Radio Liberty. They're all written by Dr. Russell Blaylock. And you'll find these fascinating sources of information, especially, when we have cancer patients, many times we'll try to get them to read your book on natural strategies. So many people are dying of cancer, I believe, unnecessarily. Would you agree with that?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Well, what we know now, the vast majority of cancers could be prevented. And we certainly could improve the treatment of existing cancers dramatically if we would utilize what's already known.
And the trouble is the cancer specialists don't, the surgeons don't, and I'm not being critical of them at all. They're doing the best they can. They're simply being lied to by their professional societies. They're being lied to by their magazines, which are dependent upon the advertisements from the drug companies. And they're being lied to by the drug company representatives who come to the office on a regular basis. We're out of time. Good night. God bless, Russell.
Night, God bless.
Bye-bye. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here, and I hope you've enjoyed our two-hour program. And if you'd like to get copies of the two-hour program, it will be available. You can call us at 1-800-544-8927 for the two-hour program, and we're hoping to put this together into a four-tape set on Alzheimer's disease. There's nothing like that out there, and people have no idea what to do. They just feel, well, defeated. If somebody and a loved one has Alzheimer's disease, what can you do for it? There's a lot you can do. Maybe we can't reverse it if it's too bad, but at least you can keep slow it down, its progression, slow it down dramatically, or perhaps even stop it. So if you'd like to get the two-hour tapes for tonight, you can give us a call. Russell's books, A Health and Nutrition Secret That Can Save Your Life. That's Health and Nutrition Secrets That Can Save Your Life. and then natural strategies for cancer patients and excitotoxins, the taste that kills, three important books. We have a four-tape set of my interviews with Russell called Life-Saving Secrets. That's Life-Saving Secrets. And all of these things are available by calling 1-800-544-8927, 1-800-544-8927. And they talk to you about the suggested price on these items. And then, of course, we hope that many of you will want to understand that behind what's going on, there's another agenda. If you've never, of course, heard my talk, None Dare Call It Genocide, I think you need to hear it. It's available on DVD or video. And then, of course, we have the planned population reduction, the talk we gave for the Prophecy Club. That is available on DVD. It's about 2 hours and 20 minutes, and I think it's a very important overview of population control. We have our monograph. You can get it off our website, Planned Population Reduction. We carry the National Security Study Memorandum 200. That's the National Security Study Memorandum 200, a top secret, a foreign policy government document released in 1974 under the name of Henry Kissinger, and you'll find out what the major thrust of America's foreign policy is. It's population control. Those of you who heard the President's State of the Union message this evening heard him talking about how we've got to invest more money in AIDS control. Are we really trying to stop the AIDS epidemic? Well, in Botswana, where the routine testing on every pregnant woman, 46% are HIV infected, almost half are HIV infected and going to die as a direct result of American foreign policy. Now, if that foreign policy was mistaken, in other words, you would want to change the public health policy that had resulted in 46% of pregnant women being HIV infected. Wouldn't you want to change the policy? But in fact, the public health authorities in Botswana wanted to do routine testing of everybody in the country to find out who was infected, and they were immediately attacked by the World Health Organization and public health officials all throughout the world. Are we really trying to stop the epidemic? Are we spending millions, hundreds of millions of dollars of your tax money on a program of population control? And I would like to suggest that's just what it is. Right now, of course, we're giving the mercury-laden vaccines to children all throughout the world. We took the mercury out of the vaccines we gave to American children, except for influenza. But we left it in the vaccines we're giving to children throughout the world. And if you have not yet seen the DVD, Mercury Autism and the Global Population Agenda. That's Mercury Autism and the Global Population Agenda by Dr. Ayub. It's available from Radio Liberty along with CD-ROM. When you get it, you get the CD-ROM with thousands of pages of scientific material dealing with, of course, the toxic effects of mercury that is in the mercury vaccine and, pardon me, the influenza vaccine and in the vaccines we're giving throughout the world to children. Why would you do that? Population control, ladies and gentlemen. Population control.